It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Well, I'm running down the road.
Welcome and welcome back.
I've got seven women on my mind.
I was standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. I was such a fine sight to see, and I have pictures to prove it. There's one statue there of Glenn Frey. You hear singing and co-writing the song, and you have a picture of me next to the statue of Jackson Browne, who wrote most of the song. So the Eagles were, that's great. I had a texter call in and said, Paul McCartney is somebody I would like to get high with. Okay, I don't know what prompted that, but I guess we were talking about Mount Cushmore and the Awake and Bake Club. And Paul McCartney, the aforementioned Eagles, or what's left of them, and Snoop. So there's your Awake and Bake Club. Those three were the headliners at a tribute at the Hollywood Bowl to Jimmy Buffett. I don't know how something like that happens, but it's glorious. Tribute to Jimmy Buffett, and there's the Eagles, and there's Snoop, and there's Paul McCartney. That's a pretty good blunt rotation. If you're picking a blunt rotation, that's a pretty good way to go. Welcome and welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage, and in keeping with that theme, 708 texter, White Sox are playing Suck-O-Matic. Well, let's find out. I'm going to take it back. Trip back to my baseball youth with a guy with all the decimal points. Joining me on the guest hotline, it's presented by Circus Sports Illinois, is John Garcia, Chief Content Officer. He runs the day-to-day operations of Stratomatic. John, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it. Thanks for making time.
No, thanks for having me on the show, Steve. Glad to be here.
Stratomatic is, and my feckless youth, which is sounds like a group open, you know, as part of Coachella. But my feckless baseball youth included playing Stratomatic, falling in love with it, learning about like the 1924 Washington Senators. And I had an author on who would, Gary Sarnoff, Chicago-based author, writing about that team. And these were guys, this is how I learned about, one of the ways I learned about these kinds of players and these kinds of teams and this kind of history and how from the 1962 Mets and playing against the 1927 Yankees and playing Stratomatic and playing in a league. And I mentioned it a couple hours ago and texters were writing in. My friend plays in a league. I had the 72, 73 and 74. That was my youth. It defined my youth. And it struck such a chord that I'm glad we get the chance to talk. And it hit me that Stratomatic was doing metrics before the word became so synonymous with baseball and all the Bill James probabilities and fan graphs and things like that. You at Stratomatic you've done this for decades now. Do I have that right? The history of Stratomatic?
Yeah, since 1961. So almost 64 years now that we've been coming out with card sets.
And the fact that it's a dice game and played on cards and the probability is the dice will come up this way, the dice will come up that way, that it evokes so much emotion for people who've played it and maybe not thought about it. So do you leverage the nostalgia? And how does it go into the day-to-day of the part of factoring in what a player could do?
Sure. So I'd say anytime Stratomatic is mentioned to anyone who plays or used to play the game, you can immediately see their face light up. I can recall my favorite Stratomatic childhood moments just as easily as I do actual MLB moments. I don't know if you remember John Halama. He pitched for Seattle a couple of years in the early 2000s. Bounced around a little bit. But he threw my first ever no-hitter for me in Stratomatic, and that is easily a top five baseball moment of my life.
Well, if Philip Umber can throw a no-hitter for the White Sox in Seattle, then a Seattle pitcher can throw a no-hitter in Stratomatic, right?
And I still have that and many of my other box scores from when I was a kid, and a lot of them are just trying to get Kerry Wood, get his 20 strikeouts, take that card and try to get to 20. I never got there. But, you know, Stratomatic, what it does, it basically puts you in the manager's seat. You know, you're controlling the action, just as kind of fans always kind of wish they were in the dugout, and this kind of brings you there. And how we create it, traditionally Stratomatic has always been past-looking. So we spend thousands of hours every year, literally thousands of hours, researching the current season, particularly for defense and running ratings, to create a season that just completed. Of course, you know, for basic batting and pitching stats, you know, we just kind of take those numbers. But our research into the defense, that includes reading, talking to multiple scouts for every team, obviously taking publicly available metrics, our own internal metrics. Basically, at the end of the day, we have a line of 10 to 15 numbers on a player that tells us how this player performs defensively or on the bases that year. And sometimes that's easy. Sometimes this tells us guy is average, 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 average. Okay, well, he's average. Sometimes he's a gold glove caliber player. One metric might have him poor. One metric might have him a little bit above average. And that's when we have to kind of decide and hammer down the ratings. And I think that's what really separates Stratomatic from any other game and why we're celebrated for the accuracy of our card sets and games, but also our simulations.
My guest is John Garcia. He's the Stratomatic Chief Content Officer, runs the day-to-day part of it. So my appreciation and my association with Stratomatic was that I'm playing with players now, like we'd have a season and we had one in 71 drafted players or had one in 72 drafted players from the 71 season. We had those cards that just passed. And yet there seems to be, you've changed over the years. You can project the next season. How have your cards changed and what have you done towards projections for the current season that we're in based on what we knew about players and teams up through the end of last season?
That's right. So, I mentioned Stratomatic has always generally been past looking, but over the last few years, we've created, really taken our research from previous seasons, and we add in player projections and season up-to-date statistics, and we create a set called Baseball Daily. And these cards get updated every single day of the MLB season, and it's kind of what I like to call the perfect portrait of every player at that snapshot in time. So preseason, we do use that to run a season simulation. We tailor the computer managers to make decisions just like real life managers would. We project playing time as best as we can for every team. And what we like about our prediction using this is that it actually creates actual box scores and takes on the life and feeling of an actual season.
What I really liked was actually holding the cards. I felt something tangible. The same reason I like books instead of ebooks. I like hardcover books. And if you're updating this every day, we're not printing out new cards. So it's online. Is it all digital?
We still have a board game. Obviously, this Baseball Daily that I was talking about, that is digital. We have a Windows and online mobile platform. Actually, at the end of this month, we're coming out with a brand new platform called Baseball Max. That's a platformless game that can be played from most any internet-connected device. Really easy, simple to use, kind of first multiplayer game that we have that you don't need to have played or known Stratomatic, anything about it, in order to be able to jump right in.
Wow, we could have the White Sox play that since they don't seem to know anything about baseball. Do you make projections for the Cubs and White Sox?
We did. So let's start with the good.
So we're going to start with the Cubs, it'd be my guess.
That is true, yes.
For those of you playing at home. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we had the Cubs actually winning the Central, getting to 90 wins, And I mentioned that we have box scores. You know, they had a full, they won 10 out of 11 in late June against the Cardinals, Giants, and the Mets in our sim. So those are good games to go to if you're looking for tickets.
Well, the Cardinals games are always good to go to. The Mets used to be good when Ron Santo was, he was hating them and burning his toupee on the Shea Stadium heaters. But the Cardinals games are always good to go to.
Christopher Morel had a great season for us. He got to 30 homers, strong season across the board. We can't predict injuries, so Justin Steele had a great sim season for us, so maybe his injury brings them just shy of 90 wins. But in the playoffs, the Cubs do get past the Padres in the first round and then lose to our eventual World Series champion Braves.
Yeah, the Braves winning the World Series. We're the Doyers. Don't you know the Doyers are the greatest thing ever? The Doyers have MVP 1, MVP 2, MVP 3 all in the top of the order. The Doyers, and you're giving me the Braves?
That Braves team is pretty good, too.
Now with Spencer Strider hurt, it's not.
Well, that's true. Again, we can't predict injuries.
Well, you should with the White Sox. I see with a team that always suffers, with guys that always get injured, half the time it's the same thing because they're running down first base. Shouldn't that be factored in your projections?
Well, we do that playing time projection. So we kind of bake in what we would expect.
Oh, okay.
You know, if a player does miss time every year, but we can't get the severity of it necessarily correct. Or, a guy who doesn't really have an injury past.
My guest is Jean Garcia, is the chief content officer for Stratomatic. I'm reliving my feckless youth here, my feckless baseball youth. So the pandemic did wonderful things for books, ebooks, and hard copy and deliveries and things like that. Did you find something positive? Did Stratomatic benefit by the pandemic?
Yeah, I would say interest across all board games increased with everyone home. But Stratomatic, it really exploded over that time. You know, with no live sports also for such a lengthy period, Strat became kind of the sports replacement for so many people. And it was a combination of both sports fans looking for something to pass the time and finding Stratomatic for the first time, and also older players who had stopped playing, you know, because life got in the way, coming back to Stratomatic and then sharing it with their families, teaching their children how to play. Really, the large majority of those who started or restarted playing during that time have stuck with it. You know, I could say from experience that kind of once you start playing Stratomatic, you get hooked, and it's really hard to look back. And that's across all of our platforms, board games, digital, and the online mobile.
And where can people find this? Before I let you go, John, I want people to be able to find it, either the board game itself so they could actually hold the cards old school style, or they can play it daily, digital. How do they access Stratomatic World today?
Yeah, you can come check us out. It's at stratomatic.com, strat-o-matic.com, or find Stratomatic Games on social media, Facebook, X. You can connect with us there and find information on all of our games.
All right, ground ball A++. That's one of the things I remember, ground ball A++. And I don't know if that still exists in the game. Does it still exist?
It does. Double play. Really, the basic game is the same as it was back then, mostly the same. And since then, we've added on complexities that make it more realistic and you give yourself more managerial control. But you can make it as easy just as it was in the 60s, or as complex as you would like it to be.
All right, ground ball A++. We're out. I appreciate your time, and thank you for helping me relive my baseball youth. Appreciate it, John.
No, thanks for having me.
John Garcia, Chief Content Officer for Stratomatic. I loved Stratomatic. I won a league, and I would play games, and I learned about George Shotgun Shuba and the 1924 Washington Senators. And I played the 1927 Yankees against the 1962 Mets, managed by Casey Stengel, and had Roger Craig and a bunch of 20-game losers. If pitching wins are a fraud stat, are losses, do we not have our baseball experts answered that? If wins are a fraud of a stat, are losses, baseball losses? Because the 62 Mets, A record, whose record, by the way, I think the White Sox could challenge for. I think they could fail to win fewer than 40 games, this Pedro Grifol gang, and wouldn't that be great? On that team, managed by Casey Stengel, he was looking at two of his young players. He said, "See that guy over there? Ed Cranepool? He's 20. In 10 years, he's got a chance to be an all-star. See that guy over there? Greg Goosen? He's 20. In 10 years, he has a chance to be 30. That was Casey Stengel. I'm going to take a break. There's more baseball. The cultural zeitgeist is coming up. And there is more baseball. We are filled with baseball anniversaries. You don't want to miss it. I won't let you miss it. Listen up. Chicago Sports Radio, success.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ebony the Score.
We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby. Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I knew it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, who owns the Chiefs?
Owns. Owns.
Owns. Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage, the cultural zeitgeist segment of Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. 35 years ago last Sunday, this hit the movie theaters.
Entire world.
Oh, look. This is Charlie Donovan. Cleveland Indians.
How would you like to manage the Indians this year?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? This is a chance to manage in the big leagues.
Let me think it over, will you, Charlie? I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
Lou Brown. Guy about some white walls. Major League. Major League made its debut 35 years ago. Sunday. Bob Uecker, still going strong. He's the announcer, and Harry Doyle. Among the things Bob Uecker said, which were we found so hard to find anything we could actually play on the radio, was Haywood leads the league in every category, including nose hair. When he sneezes, he looks like a party favor. It's one of the all-time great lines. And an oft-repeated clip from Major League.
Here's a list of the players we'll be inviting to camp.
I never heard of half of these guys, and the ones I do know are way past their prime.
Most of these guys never had a prime.
The facts are we lost our two best players to free agency. We haven't won a pennant in over 35 years. We haven't placed higher than fourth in the last 15. Obviously, it's time for some changes.
This guy here is dead.
Cross him off, then.
And they start taking her pieces of clothing off, and there you go. Cleveland Indians do it. And that is Major League's debut.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
50 years ago this week, baseball history, maybe the second greatest moment in baseball history behind Jackie Robinson integrating the majors in 1947. And by the way, that comes Monday. Monday, 1947, April 15th, Jackie Robinson integrated the majors. But this moment, the second greatest moment in baseball history, as described by Vin Scully, as only Vin Scully can.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
Vin Scully calling Henry Aaron's 715th home run, April 8th, 1974. And then Monday, 1947, Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball. So I started this in the cultural zeitgeist a couple months ago, and it bothered people. So, you know, let's keep it going. That's a good motto to have. And now we are at the 17th greatest riff in rock history. Yeah, tell me you weren't air guitaring along, strumming along with ZZ Top, Sharp Dressed Man. And if you weren't, you can leave the show now. You're excused. You will not be asked back. I always say every time you give me to leave the note, you're excused. That's okay. I think of John Wooden. And not that ZZ Top and John Wooden have anything in common, but there was one day where Bill Walton showed up, and this is late 60s, early 70s, John Wooden, as old school as it got, had made sure none of his players had long hair. Well, this is Bill Walton. Bill Walton showed up, and he had been told to get a haircut. He did not get a haircut. Long-haired Bill Walton showed up for practice, and John Wooden said, "Bill, you're excused. You can leave. You're not on the team anymore. We'll get along fine without you. Thank you." And he made Bill Walton leave the court for practice. And he was not on the team until he got a haircut. And the next day, he showed up with a haircut.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
You know what a wonderful Twitter follow is? The National Park Service. It's not something I would have thought of. I came across it. Maybe not something you would have thought of. But the National Park Service has such a wonderful, their social media people have such a wonderful sense of humor, recently tweeted, quote, "It's okay if you fall apart sometimes. S'mores fall apart and we still love them." I feel like I've been seen. I mean, it's s'mores. I love s'mores. And it's okay. The National Park Service is doing therapy. It's food therapy. It's social media therapy. S'mores fall apart. That's their job. Just like me. So they didn't just leave it at that. The National Park Service tweeted out s'mores roasting instructions and recipes that include upgrading your marshmallows by dipping them in Bailey's after roasting, or one they call the Cookie Monster. For this one, you put the chocolate on a chocolate chip cookie and a dollop of cookie dough on top of that. Transfer the hot marshmallow to the cookie and close it up for a s'more like no other s'more. I cannot imagine chocolate chip cookie, chocolate chip. It's exponential. Exponential. And here's something else from the National Park Service, which helps make it a wonderful Twitter follow. Quote, if you fall once, get up. If you fall twice, get up again. If you fall for a third time, tie your shoelaces.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
So we've established earlier in the show, I'm not a video games guy. I'm not sure where you are. You're not a Call of Duty guy, Tyler. What video games do you play?
I've honestly reduced my video game like playing a lot, but I'll be honest, Rosie, I'm more of a sports gaming guy than anything else.
Okay, well, here's something you might be interested in. I mean, if I walk into our arcade, I'm going for the pinball machines, not the video games. That's what I pinball like that. I choose pinball over Pac-Man or Pac-Woman. But I saw this item about a video game called, wait for it, Dog Poo Golf. Are you familiar with that, Tyler?
Can't say that I am, Rosie.
It's, what do you think it is?
Dog Poo Golf. I mean, it's not mini golf, is it? It's regular golf.
It's pretty much what most people would think it is, Tyler. It's a Wii-style kind of sports game. And it has music. And what you do, imagine this, your character, your avatar, your competitor flings bags of dog poop onto a green through a golf course. You have to play it strategically and you try to get it into the dumpster at the end. I couldn't figure it out. I dunked one in the water. I don't know how many more bags of dog poop that penalized me. I couldn't figure this thing out. It's at VOLE.WTF. I'm telling you, that's where it is. I'm just saying. I love the idea. Someone needs to master it and tell me how you do this. Maybe I didn't get up and do the whole Wii thing and pull the body length, but I sent along to my son and he just thought it was wonderful. And I guess if you have, you know what? I would think bags would be a lot more competitive if that's what you used. Right? Isn't this essentially what the game of bags is? And now they made a video game out of it with bags that are filled with not corn, because that's where we got the name that I really feel uncomfortable saying on the air. But, right? Couldn't you, when you walk your dog, you should take those bags, and there's bags specifically for that. There's other ways you can be resourceful, and you tie them up and wouldn't that be a more challenging way, playing bags, if they were filled with doggy calling cards? Okay. Well, that is the culture. I see no better way to end the cultural zeitgeist than talking about dog poop golf. And that's what we were doing. It's somebody master it and tell me how you did it. That's what I want to know. I'm going to take a break and come back with something. Before I do that, I want to alert you out there, fellow suckageers, everyone in Saturday Suckage Land. Join the Score and Budweiser on Thursday, May 2nd at Harry Carey's Tavern Navy Pier for the 26th annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey. Parkins and Spiegel will be there, broadcasting live from 4 to 7 p.m., with actor and comedian Jason Alexander leading the toast at 5:30. The Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey is brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you. I'm going to take a break. When I'll come back, I will come back with the best thing I saw this week, if I can get through it without crying. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score. in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. Indeed, it's Saturday Suckage. Steve Rosenblum with you to the top of the hour at 2 o'clock, as per usual. I want to discuss the bring to you, share a story, talk about the best thing I saw this week. I'm not sure I'll get through it. Please bear with me. Understand. It had been days since I saw this, since I read about it, and I still sort of well up. Give me some grace here. I think it's a wonderful story. The Boston Red Sox had their opener, their home opener, on Tuesday. But this was no ordinary home opener. This one featured the 2004 World Series champions. Theo and the boys broke the curse 20 years ago. It also featured, as if that wasn't enough, it featured some emotional moments. Tim Wakefield was a member of that team. The same knuckleballing Tim Wakefield who gave up that home run to Aaron Boone in the 11th inning of Game 7 of the ALCS in 2003. And the same remarkable Tim Wakefield who, following October, with the Red Sox season again at risk against the Yankees in the ALCS, sacrificed his Game 4 start to pitch in relief in a Game 3 blowout. That way he could save the bullpen for the rest of the series. Boston lost that game 19-8. The Red Sox fell behind 3-0. But as you know, they rallied 4 straight wins against the Yankees, with Wakefield getting 9 outs in extra innings of Game 5 to set up that home run by David Ortiz, the one that won it in the 14th inning. Teammates loved Tim Wakefield. Fans did too. How can you not love his story? That's a story of redemption. How can you not love that Red Sox story of redemption? The year before with Aaron F. Boone, down 3-0, 1918, 4 straight wins, the only time it's done in baseball history, and here it's done to the evil Empire Yankees, and here's your most unlikely World Series winner. Tim Wakefield died last October of brain cancer. He was 57. He left a wife, Stacy, and 2 kids, Brianna and Trevor. That was October. Then came February, when Brianna, who is 18, and Trevor, who is 20, lost their mother. Stacy, the other parent, succumbed to pancreatic cancer at the age of 53. And here we are in April for the Red Sox home opener, and there's this story from Kevin Millar on a Red Sox broadcast that day. Quote, the 2004 players had a little ceremony this morning to give tribute to Tim and Stacy. And Mike Timlin had every player stand up, and he told Brianna and Trevor, quote, look around. We are your uncles. We are here for you from this point on. End single quote. Millar continued, that's one thing that separates this team, the family aspect. We have each other's backs. Not just on the field, but 20 years later, here we are. That was emotional. End quote. But wait, there's more. There's the first pitch. Ceremonial first pitch. And there's Red Sox captain and catcher, the captain from that legendary 2004 team, crouched behind the plate. Players from the 2004 team are gathered behind the mound. And throwing out the first pitch, sorry, is Brianna. Tim Wakefield and his family live down the street from Jason Veritek. She was asked to throw out the first pitch. She saw Jason Veritek, former neighbor, dad's battery mate, said, "You're catching this, right?" There she is, Brianna Wakefield, throwing out first pitch to her dad's catcher. She threw a knuckleball. Hugs and smiles followed. You could see it in the video. Everybody there. You can actually see Theo in the background. He orchestrates every baseball miracle, as you Cub fans know. And goodness, watch that video, and you should see Johnny Damon's hair. You get a good view of this, and you'll watch Johnny Damon end the moment, end the first pitch, end the ceremonial first pitch by handing the World Series trophy to Brianna and Trevor to raise together. Brianna and Trevor Wakefield holding their dad's World Series trophy on the mound 20 years after the Red Sox broke the curse, pulled off a miracle. That is the best thing I saw this week. Thank you for bearing with me and trying to get through it. And I'm not really a Red Sox fan. I'm a baseball fan. I thought that was stories. Baseball is about stories. It's about people. And certainly the 2004 Red Sox breaking the curse, much like you know the 2016 Cubs breaking the curse with Theo doing both things. But that idea of coming back from a 3-0 deficit against the evil, dreaded Yankees and having Tim Wakefield play such a role after he walked off the mound. You can still see the video of him walking off the mound, 2003 ALCS, when, as he's known in Boston, Aaron F. Boone hit that home run. And there he is sacrificing a start, Tim Wakefield is, and there he is pitching in relief for 3 innings, enough time to give David Ortiz a shot. And what a shot. Big Poppy. And they win the World Series, winning 4 straight over the Yankees, 4 straight over the Cardinals. And just short of 20 years, Tim Wakefield struck by cancer and dies. 5 months later, his wife, Stacy, dies of pancreatic cancer. And their orphans are on the field representing them, throwing first pitch. I don't know if there'll be better stories this year, but I don't know that there'll be any that make me cry. And I tied this to, you may think I'm crazy, Jim Valvano. And here's why. North Carolina State makes a run in the tournament. Jim Valvano is, so much of what he did and said comes back. And I had shared with my daughter, the woman I love, the significant thing that Jim Valvano said, besides never give up, never ever give up, was he talked about if you laugh and you cry and you think and you do that all in one day, you've had a good day. He did that at the ESPYs shortly before he would pass away from cancer. And Jim Valvano said, if you laugh, you cry, and you think, you've had a good day. So I've laughed today. I've cried. I don't know whether I thought or not. But I'll do that the rest of the day, and I'll think about what a great opportunity this was. And I'll think about how nice you people were to listen to this and help me get through it. And I'll think about whenever the next time is that I'll be on the radio. If nobody important listened, I'll be back next week. If they did, uh-oh. Have a happy 420, y'all. Celebrate responsibly. This is Saturday Suck It, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
It.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. Indeed, it's Saturday Suckage. Steve Rosenblum with you. To the top of the hour at 2 o'clock, as per usual. I want to discuss the bring to you, share a story, talk about the best thing I saw this week. I'm not sure I'll get through it. Please bear with me. Understand. It had been days since I saw this, since I read about it. And I still sort of well up. Give me some grace here. I think it's a wonderful story. The Boston Red Sox had their opener, their home opener, on Tuesday. But this was no ordinary home opener. This one featured the 2004 World Series champions. Theo and the boys broke the curse 20 years ago. It also featured, as if that wasn't enough, it featured some emotional moments. Tim Wakefield was a member of that team. The same knuckleballing Tim Wakefield who gave up that home run to Aaron Boone in the 11th inning of Game 7 of the ALCS in 2003. And the same remarkable Tim Wakefield who, following October, with the Red Sox season again at risk against the Yankees in the ALCS, sacrificed his Game 4 start to pitch in relief in a Game 3 blowout. That way he could save the bullpen for the rest of the series. Boston lost that game 19-8. The Red Sox fell behind 3-0. But as you know, they rallied 4 straight wins against the Yankees, with Wakefield getting 9 outs in extra innings of Game 5 to set up that home run by David Ortiz, the one that won it in the 14th inning. Teammates loved Tim Wakefield. Fans did too. How can you not love his story? That's a story of redemption. How can you not love that Red Sox story of redemption? The year before, with Aaron F. Boone, down 3-0, 1918, 4 straight wins, the only time it's done in baseball history, and here it's done to the evil Empire Yankees, and here's your most unlikely World Series winner. Tim Wakefield died last October of brain cancer. He was 57. He left a wife, Stacy, and 2 kids, Brianna and Trevor. That was October. Then came February, when Brianna, who is 18, and Trevor, who is 20, lost their mother. Stacy, the other parent, succumbed to pancreatic cancer at the age of 53. And here we are in April for the Red Sox home opener, and there's this story from Kevin Millar on a Red Sox broadcast that day. Quote, the 2004 players had a little ceremony this morning to give tribute to Tim and Stacy. And Mike Timlin had every player stand up. And he told Brianna and Trevor, quote, look around. We are your uncles. We are here for you from this point on. End single quote. Millar continued, that's one thing that separates this team, the family aspect. We have each other's backs, not just on the field, but 20 years later. Here we are. That was emotional. End quote. But wait, there's more. There's the first pitch. Ceremonial first pitch. And there's Red Sox captain and catcher, the captain from that legendary 2004 team, crouched behind the plate. Players from the 2004 team are gathered behind the mound. And throwing out the first pitch. Sorry. Is Brianna. Tim Wakefield and his family live down the street from Jason Veritek. She was asked to throw out the first pitch. She saw Jason Veritek, former neighbor, dad's battery mate, said, you're catching this, right? There she is, Brianna Wakefield, throwing out first pitch to her dad's catcher. She threw a knuckleball. Hugs and smiles followed. You could see it in the video. Everybody there. You can actually see Theo in the background. He orchestrates every baseball miracle, as you Cub fans know. And goodness, watch that video, and you should see Johnny Damon's hair. You get a good view of this, and you'll watch Johnny Damon end the moment, end the first pitch, end the ceremonial first pitch by handing the World Series trophy to Brianna and Trevor to raise together. Brianna and Trevor Wakefield holding their dad's World Series trophy on the mound 20 years after the Red Sox broke the curse, pulled off a miracle. That is the best thing I saw this week. Thank you for bearing with me and trying to get through it. And I'm not really a Red Sox fan. I'm a baseball fan. I thought that was stories. Baseball is about stories. It's about people. And certainly the 2004 Red Sox breaking the curse, much like you know the 2016 Cubs breaking the curse with Theo doing both things. But that idea of coming back from a 3-0 deficit against the evil, dreaded Yankees and having Tim Wakefield play such a role after he walked off the mound. You can still see the video of him walking off the mound, 2003 ALCS, when, as he's known in Boston, Aaron F. Boone hit that home run. And there he is sacrificing a start, Tim Wakefield is. And there he is pitching in relief for three innings, enough time to give David Ortiz a shot. And what a shot. Big Poppy. And they win the World Series, winning four straight over the Yankees, four straight over the Cardinals. And just short of 20 years, Tim Wakefield struck by cancer and dies. 5 months later, his wife, Stacy, dies of pancreatic cancer. And their orphans are on the field representing them, throwing first pitch. I don't know if there'll be better stories this year, but I don't know that there'll be any that make me cry. And I tied this to, you may think I'm crazy, Jim Valvano. And here's why. North Carolina State makes a run in the tournament. Jim Valvano is, so much of what he did and said comes back. And I had shared with my daughter, the woman I love, the significant thing that Jim Valvano said, besides never give up, never ever give up, was he talked about if you laugh and you cry and you think, and you do that all in one day, you've had a good day. He did that at the ESPYs shortly before he would pass away from cancer. And Jim Valvano said, if you laugh, you cry, and you think, you've had a good day. So I've laughed today. I've cried. I don't know whether I thought or not, but I'll do that the rest of the day, and I'll think about what a great opportunity this was, and I'll think about how nice you people were to listen to this and help me get through it. And I'll think about whenever the next time is that I'll be on the radio. If nobody important listened, I'll be back next week. If they did, uh-oh. Have a happy 420, y'all. Celebrate responsibly. This is Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.